SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast was produced on Jajawarong and Tungurung lands, and we pay our respects to elders past and present, thanking them for their care of this country and extending respect to all First Nations people listening.
So my full name is actually Poor Ethelta, but like in Australia and when I go to school, people usually know me as Ethel.
Ethel volunteers to help newly arrived Australians settle into life here.
When I know there's like opportunities for them to get involved in, I'm always like pushing them to, you know, be a part of it.
One way to settle in and prepare for the changing climate is to get involved in the local food system. Growing, sharing, selling food in our neighbourhoods helps make stronger connections with where we live and develop a buffer against food insecurity.
We're here at the Old Church on the Hill.
On Saturday we have a growers market just on that little alley. We set up community grower stores where they can come and sell their produce and make a little bit of money.
But the newly arrived gardeners Athau is reaching out to don't seem all that interested in participating in the growers market at the local community hub.
Well, I think the language barrier, and like they probably think there's like a whole system where you have to like enroll, and like, you know, they feel like it might be complicated, so that's why they're a bit like reluctant to join and like be a part of it.
So is the reluctance just a language barrier and red tape, or is there more to it than that? I'm Kyla Brettle, and you're listening to Everything We Need, a climate podcast about making change in our lives for the better. With stories about people who see the big picture, that climate isn't an isolated issue, but affects all aspects of our lives, and is an opportunity to rethink what we need to thrive now and into the future.
We are living in very dangerous times in the days and weeks ahead.
We got a call at 11:15 and already there was water inside the substation. It was phenomenal how quickly the creek came up. It was absolutely raging.
The community in the meantime has done fantastic efforts on both sides of the river to get sandbags out around the vulnerable houses. But this is something that's going to be around.
I was talking to some of the multicultural community members who had been volunteering during the flood. And this volunteer noticed that 99% of the people who came to pick up the sandbags were people from the established Anglo-Saxon communities. Just a few hours before the flood, the multicultural community members had no clue. According to his words, they were chilling out at their place thinking, this is not going to affect us, or did not never knew about it. So they never came and picked up the sandbags. So that itself was saying how when something happens, when a disaster happens, or when we are going to have the effects of climate change, it's always the communities with significant barriers, newly arrived communities are going to be the worst affected in the scenario.
Linto Thomas, Director of Regional Victorians of Colour, talking about the 2022 floods in Shepparton. For those fleeing persecution and war, Australia's seen as a safe haven, and it is a lucky country in many respects. But it's also facing pretty intense climate impacts. Despite the wet weather, it's the driest continent inhabited by humans on Earth, and it's looking to get a lot drier. Extinction rates are through the roof, and Australia is among one of the most fire-prone countries in the world. So it's important that everybody living here does what they can to prepare for the many changes that come with climate change. This is especially so for those at the pointy end of climate injustice, the groups and communities that will experience the effects of climate change sooner and more keenly than others.
Hello?
Is that free parking?
Yeah, it's free parking, mate. You just park anywhere you can find the park.
Let me check with. I know. Do we have more buntings or this is it?
I don't know about buntings.
I think. Hello.
Do I need to work or
if you want to, but you don't have to.
Yeah,
people are busy barbecuing and all volunteers are there to make setting up things, make sure we everybody have food by 6:30.
What do you do?
Today we're here at the Longali Splash Park, seeing like all the multicultural communities coming together and sharing our food and dances.
We're at a free community dinner called a moving feast, happening in the regional city of Bendigo, home of about 100,000, with nearly 8% of people speaking a language other than English at home.
We call it Harmony Week here in Australia, and we're bringing our different cultural backgrounds together and acknowledging the contribution that migrant and refugee communities make to making a stronger, happier, healthier Australia.
Hello everyone, my name is Ethel and I am part of the Karen community.
The Karen are the First Nations people of Myanmar, also known as Burma.
To Australia as refugees and having to live and grow between our family traditional culture and the Australian mainstream culture.
I used to be like really shy, like with public speaking and stuff, I'd be nervous. But then I was like, you know what, go for it. If you make a mistake, you make a mistake.
Athau is 21. She's a Karen youth leader studying health science at university, as well as working part-time.
I just hope to inspire like a little girl, you know, and see it be like, okay, a girl who speaks the same language as me, she's up there like, you know, facilitating a conversation on whatever, you know, yeah, that they can do whatever they want. Yeah, like thriving. They can thrive. They're not in survival mode anymore because they've got concrete like your foundation where they like they can work off of from and like make use of the opportunities we have in Australia.
I'm just typing up the feedback that we got from the Moving Feast and Harmony Week. A lot of people like enjoy community coming together.
Athau helped put on the Moving Feast at the Splash Park as part of her job with Linto and Regional Victorians of Colour. She's also involved in netball games, youth concerts and other social events that get her community out and about.
To make them feel like they belong and they're accepted and they're here and they have a purpose and they have strength and they can contribute to the community.
Our focus is mainly looking at two aspects of settlement. One is that the community connection within the communities. The second thing is that connection with the broader community.
As we've been exploring in the series, community connection is essential to being resilient to the impacts of climate change, making you better able to roll with uncertainty and adapt to the new normal. Developing these ties within your community and the broader community is what the government's regional Climate Ready plan is telling everyone to work on, regardless of how long you've been here. It's so you know where to get support when it comes down to protecting your home with sandbags. And as global supply chains get disrupted, you have other ways to find fresh food.
And often there are significant barriers in that space, and that happens. We tend to see that settlement services are always exclusive with services and activities which are created only for, say, refugee communities, newly arrived communities. So there is very little scope or opportunity for broader communities as well as the multicultural communities to interact with each other.
Less than 20 years ago, there were virtually no Karen Australians living in Bendigo.
We didn't know Bendigo existed and we didn't choose to come to Bendigo. Our family was the first Karen family in Bendigo, so it was very difficult to make a connection with other community members.
Lasu Parthay and his family immigrated to Australia in 2007. His daughter Bugay is interpreting.
When I used to live in Burma, it was a very peaceful village and the forest is beautiful and everything that we need is provide the forest. The hardest part is the Burmese militaries came in, then destroyed the village. That's why we have to move to the refugee camp. When we live in the camp and we were hopeful that to come to a new country, but we didn't know where we are going to locate it. But we don't really care where we're going to locate it as long as we get out of the refugee camp.
How do you keep your spirit up through those experiences?
He said that, you know, you have to stay strong and you have to calm your mind, because with the situation like this and can give you stress, if you think too much, you can also develop mental health issues.
So how important is it to know someone already in the country in order to get into Australia?
Coming to a third country is very difficult. It's very important to know someone, and we were very lucky that we know a family friend live in Australia. When we moved to Australia, my children are very small, and both of us cannot speak English. You know, we will live in our sponsored house and we depend on them like kids 24/7. For example, grocery shopping, school drop off, using stuff in the house, technology, you know, everything. It's like you just learn to walk again.
I can see how important it is to have strong networks within the community, you know, to survive, really. Yes.
I think we're really resilient because, like, we've gone through so much, like, in just one generation, relying on each other, not just being individual. I think it's really, really big in the community and how we keep being resilient.
Resilience should not be mistaken as happiness or ability to cope with anything and everything. People had to do it because they had no other choice and they had done it.
Athal's experience of arrival in Australia is different to Lasu's. A generation younger, she was born in a refugee camp and has never been to Myanmar or Burma. For Athal, being able to understand English easily revealed other challenges to living here.
When we were newly arrived in Australia, we had to go to the hospital. Like, I was only 8 and my mom had my baby sister, so we had to do like a checkup. I remember taking the bus and then the lady just looked at us and like looked at a man, and she said, "I wish these people would go back to their country," you know. So, and I was the only one who understood that. My mom didn't, my sister didn't, because she was only a baby. Mom doesn't speak English. So as a young kid, I already felt like I was like, oh, this isn't where I belong, you know. And then like, oh, I must try and be like them so they'll accept me. So I didn't, like, when we had Korean school and like our parents would tell us to go, I didn't go. So like, that's why, like, I don't really know how to read or write Korean.
So you must have gone through some sort of transition.
I did. So in year 8, one of my teachers, he looked at me and he's like, "I'd be embarrassed if I was you. Like, you're Korean, but you don't know how to read and write Korean." So that really stuck with me. Why am I trying to speak another language more fluently, and why aren't I learning my mother tongue, you know? Okay, now, like, I have to do something about it. That's why, like, I'm really passionate about integrating the two cultures together.
For regional Victorians of colour, pushing back on issues like refugees being isolated or pigeonholed by their cultural background, or even pressured to assimilate, looks like hosting social events.
Maybe whether it is a community garden event or a larger moving feast gathering where the whole neighbourhood or all the community coming together, or smaller monthly community dinners where few people come together.
It's also working with grassroots organisations like neighbourhood houses and community gardens that run services and programmes for everyone.
For us, that work involves working and supporting our community members to feel safe. They feel confident to walk into that place. The volunteers and people who are running these places also feel trained and feel they can confidently welcome newly arrived community members. Those kind of works, it's not about giving a one-off training. It's about having ongoing events and activities where this exchange of ideas, exchange of people meeting each other and sharing their thoughts, accent, traditions in an informal way and create that community connection.
Lemongrass.
Yeah, this is my garden. So we planted lemongrass and broccoli.
It's a good time for coriander though.
17 years after Lasu and his family first arrived in Bendigo, Karen is spoken in 1,600 households, making it the most common language spoken at home after English. And Lasu is a member of the Long Gully Community Garden and doing lots of things recommended to get climate ready, from getting better connected to becoming more food secure to sharing local knowledge about dealing with impacts happening here.
What are some of the differences between the way that you've learnt to garden and the way that the gardeners that you've met have gardened?
It's very different because back in the home we are gardening to survive, to grow our own food, but in here we are gardening to enjoy the community.
I want to plant some coriander in my backyard, tell him, can you give me some seed?
And I think the strength of a good community garden is that idea of people getting to know each other and saying, I've got too much squash, would you like some? Or that looks really interesting, and the gardener saying, here's a bunch of my water spinach, go home and steam it and see what you think.
Jonathan Ridnell manages the Long Gully Community Garden.
And Lasu, through word of mouth, we've now reached out through, call it his extended friend network, and so now out of the 28 raised garden beds we lease to the community, a third of them are Karen families.
Jonathan's been to moving feast events at the Long Gully Community Garden, put on by regional Victorians of colour.
Going to the Karen dinner and actually eating food from the garden that's been prepared by our Karen families was not just tasty, but an education. Karen horticulture is about using as much of a plant as you possibly can. So leaves and stems come off for salads and for stews, and the roots come off for stews and other cooking. So the whole of plant, I think, philosophy is something which I'm absorbing and observing and thinking, how do I do more of that?
As part of preparing and planning for the Long Gully Feast, Athal led a structured conversation with the Karen gardeners. They talked about how climate change is impacting Bendigo, but really focused in on what the Karen community already knows and the skills they already bring to dealing with these sorts of challenges and opportunities.
It went really well with the gardeners telling us that we value gardening because knowledges have been passed down from generation to generation.
Linto says that climate education for newly arrived communities often assumes they have no knowledge or expertise in this space.
The conversation always starts about teaching them, educating them. It speaks about what is lacking. And always we speak about projects that create awareness and invite the marginalized communities to join the response. We don't want to make an effort to look at how we can address these challenges in traditional ways of thinking.
One thing that came out of the conversation, that they know things. It's not like they always have to be, like, they can teach people, they don't always have to be taught.
We can flip the narrative, we can go to the community, start listening to them, create a space where people can actually start sharing their knowledge, their ideas around climate change in this instant, around adaptation, and then we can find answers and build on those answers from there. And I think it's important to start listening to these grassroots voices.
I did want to ask, has there been any negative side effects or sort of intolerance from raising the profile of the Karen community in Bendigo?
Yes, there was an incident just last year.
A local family with a Karen background was celebrating.
My family is Buddhist, so we had a prayer.
And some of the neighbours, I don't think, liked it.
I received a letter.
About 10 to 15 families got these anonymous letters.
Whether it's from an individual or from a group of individuals, I'm not sure.
Saying, how there's like weird chanting coming from your house and it's really loud and like disrespectful. There's like elderlies around your neighbourhood, don't you understand?
You don't sing in your backyard. What she did was not the Australian way.
They have to behave better or otherwise
take your culture and take it back home.
So it was like very, very hurtful. Because we're refugees, even though we've been here like over 10 years, a lot of our kids are born here and they're being raised here. So are they still refugees?
You
can't say that the Westerners are more racist or the other person are more racist and more discriminate. It's, if I have to be honest, it's in every race. We all are guests to Australia, you know, the owner of this land are the indigenous people. The English people and the Korean people are the other guests to this country.
Issues of racism, they always occur more in areas where there is high level of social inequalities, and which comes from that idea that resources within the communities, which are supposed to be used for the welfare of the established citizens, are being used to support newly arrived refugees or other ethnic communities or religious minorities. And climate change is going to only increase that anger much more. They are going to feel more and more vulnerable, more and more make the life more unaffordable. And that anger is going to be expressed as racism.
So in lots of ways, like dealing with racism intolerance now is really like a climate adaptation.
Yeah, I think the more and more we look at climate change and adaptation, it's becoming more and more explicit that it's not going to just happen around food or rain patterns. It's already having a direct impact on our life, our day-to-day life.
In response to the racist letter last year, regional Victorians of colour partnered with other community groups to show solidarity with the Karen community and hold a free moving feast celebration.
We needed to do something in the suburbs, in those community centres, a positive counteraction towards this event. And the voice that has to be heard is the multicultural voices of young people who had been affected by it. And also wanted to create a feeling that those voices are being supported by local grassroots community organizations.
And that event became the model for this year's Harmony Day feast at the Long Gully Splash Park.
International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
Great. To me, they're more people, that's all.
It really helps us like understand each other better because you get a lot of misunderstandings.
I want them to feel like we all have commitment and love to the society and to the people, and I hope they feel that.
So for you guys who aren't from outside of Australia, if you see someone different or who doesn't speak the same language as you, what you can do is just give them a smile. A smile is a universal language, so just give them a smile. Thank you. That will be all for us.
Thank you very much.
I love how regional Victorians of colour keep their eyes on the big picture of human relationships, the stuff that underpins everything we do, and working to promote healthy interaction that respects and honours difference while supporting lots of connections and links. Humanity is going to need as much empathy as we can muster as the climate continues to intensify. An Australian think tank, the Institute for Economics and Peace, projects that 1.2 billion people could be displaced by climate-related events over the next couple of decades. Climate change certainly tests our humanity, but also comes with the opportunity to do things better. My heartfelt thanks to those whose voices you heard in this episode. Paul Athoucha, Linto Thomas, Lasu Pate, Bugay Pate, and Jonathan Ridnall. In the next and final story in this podcast, we explore a First Nations approach to adapting to our changing climate with the launch of the JARA climate change strategy, Turning Wrong Way Climate Right Way. So make sure you're following everything we need on SBS Audio or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything We Need is written, recorded, edited and produced by me, Kyla Brettle, with Jane Curtis as story editor, consulting producer and on show notes. All the music you heard was by Rob Law and gorgeous production photography by Carmen Bunting. This podcast is based on an earlier documentary commissioned by the Victorian State Government's Adapt Loddon Mallee, with executive production from Donna Keitana. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Kyla Brettle. See you next time.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly.